Welcome to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me today on the other end of the line is Caroline Kilborn.
And good morning, everyone. I hope it's warmer. I hope it's warmer where you are.
I know. Isn't this crazy? It's the middle of April when we're recording this, and it's like, you know, below freezing out there.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Oh, my gosh.
So, Mom, tell us about our guest today.
Well, today we have a very interesting book to tell you about and an author. And the book is Forever Boy, A Mother's Memoir of Autism and Finding Joy. And the author is Kate Swinson. Now, Kate is the creator of the blog and Facebook page Finding Cooper's Voice. She speaks regularly about autism, parenting, and motherhood, and is a contributor to Today's Parents, The Today Show, and the Love What Matters blog. Her mission is to create a safe place for families of children and teens with special needs to come together and laugh, cry, and support each other. She lives in Minnesota with her family. And welcome to Writers' Voices.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
And the title of the book is Forever Boy, and that... Why don't we just start right out with what that means?
Yes, I do get a lot of questions about the title. So my son Cooper is now 11, and he was diagnosed with severe nonverbal autism at age 3. And the title really talks, or I guess I'm hoping the title really shines a light on how we get forever with this amazing little boy to try and figure out his mysteries, to advocate for him, to celebrate life and the life that he's going to lead, because he isn't on a timeline. He's really doing things at his own pace, and it's been so fun as it goes.
Oh, now you didn't always see it that way, did you?
No, absolutely not. The diagnosis was very, no.
And that's really what this book is about. And what I found really, really touching and special about this is that you came to learn and you're trying to share that Cooper doesn't need to be fixed. It was just our, as a society's, attitudes towards him that need to be fixed.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, when he was diagnosed, we were told so many dark things about autism. We were told so many things he would never do and just these just dark predictions. And I actually wasn't told something good about autism until he was 5. And that can be a lonely couple of years thinking you're alone with this thing and that no one else understands and you're only hearing sad things. So once I realized, and it took me some hard moments, but I definitely realized, like, he's exactly who he was born to be. He's awesome. It's me who needs to catch up.
And I'm sure other people in your life may have had more trouble coming to that realization than you, or maybe some of them came to it before. How does that, you know, how do you deal with that?
That's actually really common in families. I hear it all the time, even today. Usually it seems like one parent, you know, really jumps in, or they're seeing something, they're noticing something, and kind of pushes for answers. And in my case, that was me. I saw it, and I wanted to help him. And my husband, who is a wonderful man, was very much like, he's fine. He'll catch up. He's a boy. And, you know, he wasn't around children a lot, so he wasn't seeing what I was seeing. So it was pretty isolating for me because it almost felt like I was advocating for this thing that we didn't want to be real, but I knew was real. Mm-hmm. It's the same. It can be often the same for like grandparents, adult siblings. They don't want this to be true. So it's hard for them to catch up.
How does it make a difference though when you do accept it? How does that really change things?
Well, for me, acceptance took a lot of years, but Cooper was diagnosed at 3.5 and I jumped in head first, feet first, whole body to help him. and did everything that parents should do and most are doing for their kids, early intervention, speech, OT, all those different things. But it took me a lot of years to realize that autism was forever. I'm a very hardworking person. I set goals, and it's like, you know, you grow up and your parents tell you set a goal and work for it and achieve it. And for me, one of the things was getting Cooper talking, you know, getting him playing, getting him into mainstream school. And those things weren't going to happen for definitely for a long time. So once I realized he was exactly who he was supposed to be, we relaxed a lot and we were able just to start living.
And enjoying who he is.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of the trap to hope, isn't it? That, you know, you're hoping for something different, and so you don't get to enjoy what you have in the moment. Isn't that's kind of the whole kind of theory behind Buddhism, I think. Were there any spiritual traditions that you looked to that helped you in this journey?
No, I really, you know, I grew up as a Catholic and I'm now Lutheran and definitely have a relationship with God. But I was, you know, I was angry for a while. I couldn't understand why this was my son. And I was just very confused and all that. And, but definitely worked through that as the years went on.
Yeah. You know, this is an amazing challenge that you were faced with, and the willingness to share the details of it with readers must have, you know, or with strangers, really, was how did you come to that willingness to be able to do that?
Well, so I have a husband who is very not a lot of emotion. That's how I would describe him, which is a positive in a lot of aspects. Like if there is a house fire or a natural disaster, having babies, very wonderfully calm man, but does not speak to my emotional heart that is on my sleeve. So when my son was two, our son, I started writing. I created this blog called Finding Cooper's Voice in Private. And I think like three people read my writing. I mean, it was so tiny. And I liked it that way. I liked to pour out my soul. The writing was raw and I was confused and I was scared. And I kept writing as I went through the autism diagnosis and then into our harder years, eventually starting a Facebook page. And the funny part is I think many people will say this, when you start writing or sharing, you really don't think anyone's going to care. you know, I never expected anyone to go watch my videos, read my work. I'm like, it'll be my mom and, you know, my sister. And my words seem to resonate with a lot of people, and they were polarizing to some, which can, you know, be a little scary as well. And I learned the hard realities of social media pretty early on that, you know, I could make people angry just by saying that I was worried for my son's future. So I pulled back for a lot of years and just kind of shared the positive and the joys. And that's great, too. But in the book, I opened back up again because the hardest part, I think, in life is feeling alone in something. So if you can find someone that understands what you're going through, you're helping so many people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I just don't understand why anybody would. I know they're out there because I see it on Twitter and on Facebook and so forth. But why would anybody attack someone like you who's just sharing your own personal challenges? I just don't understand that.
Social media can be such a beautiful thing. I mean, when Cooper was diagnosed, we live a really rural area and we thought we had the only, you know, autistic child. I mean, we didn't know anyone, you know, and then social media opens up this beautiful way to connect with people across the world that are going through the same thing. So there are so many positives, but yeah, it can be scary too.
Yeah. No kidding.
What worries me is that, you know, we turn to the medical community for help. And sometimes they just don't have the, I don't know, the empathy. I know they're stressed too. especially in today's world. But, you know, with a situation like yours, I just felt like they didn't have any empathy for you and what you were going to be facing. Did you feel like that?
I felt like I was standing in a hallway with 100 doors that were all slamming shut, and I was screaming, "Can you help my son?" And the doors just kept slamming and slamming and slamming, and it was so confusing to me because I would say, like, things, I can't remember the exact year, but I'd be like, "It's 2017. Like, why can't I get help for my son who has ear infections, who's severely autistic, or whatever the issue was?" And I think what happens is, and I'm learning this, is that no one's going to advocate for your child like you are. And a doctor may have 500 patients. An amazing teacher may have 100 students, whatever it may be. So they're just seeing little bits and, you know, snips of what you're going through. So you really need to be a squeaky wheel, and a kind squeaky wheel, and keep pushing, because we have to get these kids seen and heard.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Tell me about finding Cooper's voice, why you named the blog that, and what that means for you.
Well, that's kind of a funny thing. So my son was diagnosed nonverbal, and I'll be honest with you, I had no idea what nonverbal was. I, first-time mom, and I remember saying to my mom, I would call her crying all the time, just, you know, so worried, and he's not babbling, and she's like, "Everybody talks, Katie." She'd always say that. And then my dad, he would always be like, he'd say just like this, "I know he's going to talk, sweetheart. I just know it." And finally, one day I snapped and I'm like, "You don't know that."
Oh.
"I love you, Daddy, but you don't know that." And I really thought I was searching for his voice. You know, we're going to find the thing, the therapy, the whatever it may be that's going to get this son or my son talking. And as the years went on, I learned so much that communication doesn't have to be verbal. And my sweet boy, he's 11 now, he talks with pictures and a computer and gestures and sounds. And I realized, like, this full circle moment, like, I was looking for my voice. I was looking for my voice in the world of advocacy and special needs parenting in my spot. So it actually is a really beautiful thing, I think.
Now, are you naturally outgoing and you know, like, you're doing a lot of public speaking, a lot of outreach? Does that come naturally to you, or is that a challenge for you?
So I was really outgoing before I had Cooper, my first son. I was really, really bubbly and loved to go out and be with friends and people. And you know, autism in my son really changed me in the sense that we had to stay home and we had to kind of introvert and come inside just to keep him safe and figure out what we were going through and all this. So it definitely changed me. And I became an introvert for a long time. And so now I say I'm an extroverted introvert. So I feel like I can talk about autism. I don't know if I can talk about anything else though.
Oh. Did you know much at all about autism before you had Cooper?
So I probably had heard the word, but it was something that happened to other people's kids. I mean, or other, it was on the news, or it wasn't in my life. So I didn't. And the story of how I heard it is really interesting. I was at work and we had these lunch and learns where you could take a break and go eat lunch and listen to a presenter. And they were on different topics like adoption and financial counseling, whatever it may be. And I was sitting there eating my sandwich and the presenter starts talking about this autism spectrum disorder. And they were describing Cooper, and my face turned red, and I was like scared. I'm like, "I gotta get out of here." It was fight or flight. So I'm like, "Everyone's gonna know." I mean, I was having a panic attack, I think. And I stood up and I pushed my chair really forcefully, and it like made a loud noise. And then everyone was looking at me, and I was like, "Oh my goodness!" And I got out and I ran to my office and I spent the whole afternoon Googling autism, and that's really the first time it became a part of my language, I guess.
But you had been concerned before that and had been asking your medical practitioners for some input even prior to that point, right?
Yeah, and that's still really common today, and it's a important thing to touch on. So I knew right away, I could tell Cooper was very cutest little meatball he was, but he struggled to eat because he had some oral issues, but we didn't know that at the time. He was crying a lot. He needed stimulation. He only slept 20 minutes at a time. I would call my mom and my mother-in-law just being like, he only sleeps like 5 hours a day. And they're like, that's not possible. And I was like, oh, it's possible. I mean, no one believed me. And I started bringing these concerns to my doctor, and I was told, you're a first-time mom. You need to calm down, you need to relax, and just let this happen. Oh. And boys are late bloomers. They're late talkers. And really, the threshold that they ask parents to wait for is till their kids are three. And that's late.
That it is, isn't it? Yeah. Because isn't for everything I've heard and read, the earlier you start working with the kids, the better the more skills that they are likely to be able to gain.
Yes, absolutely. Early intervention is key.
Wow. And yet they make you wait till he's three.
Yeah. So what we did, and we did what a lot of families did too, is we did private therapy. So we just went and did speech and OT, and we were a young family. We had no money, is the way I describe it in the book. And we had to pay for these insanely expensive speech sessions, OT, physical therapy, all this different stuff, because we didn't have a diagnosis. So without a diagnosis, insurance won't cover it. So we were putting these therapy sessions on our credit card. And I remember we would agonize, like, do we just keep, paying? But what other choice do parents have? Of course you keep paying.
That's just crazy.
Yeah, I know. It is.
So is there any way to get that changed? To to change the system so that doesn't happen anymore?
I think the needle's moving. I think that we are moving it where autism is being detected earlier. I think that people are getting more aware of it. And I do think it's getting better. But, one problem definitely is rural areas. We were in a very rural area. So that was very hard. We actually moved for him. We moved 3 hours to a metro area to get services, but not every family can do that.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, I was just wondering how long it took you to write this book.
Oh, so I also a very sweet story. So I had a wonderful lady who follows me on my Facebook page that was like, you should write a book. And I mean, you're me. I'm like, sure. Okay. Whatever. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, okay. Right? But nothing ever came of it. And I eventually ended up connecting with her. She's an amazing lady who lives in New York, and she connected me with an agent and wrote a proposal, which was honestly hard. Writing a book proposal is hard. And I consider myself a writer. So I was like, this is hard. We got problems. And sold it to an imprint called Park Row. They're part of HarperCollins, which was really exciting. Signed my contract on a Friday, and that Sunday the world shut down for COVID. Like, the emails came out from every school district, like, school is done. And I was suddenly facing a six month deadline with three kids at home and pregnant. And I was terrified.
Oh my.
But yes, I made it. I did it. But it was one of the hardest things of my life because there was just no time.
Oh my goodness. Now, you had been writing the blog all along. Or had you paused on that at some point? So you were writing all along. How much of that content were you able to kind of repurpose for the book?
So I thought I was going to be able to be a lot. Like, I was like, oh, this won't be too bad. I can just repurpose a lot of my blog. But if I come to find out that people want new content. So a lot of it is actually new. I just had someone say to me the other day, they're like, I thought I knew you so well, and there's so many parts in here I didn't know. So a lot of it is new, and it really goes more into our marriage, which, and spoiler alert, my husband and I got divorced from each other and remarried to each other back. So I talk a lot about that, which people are loving. And I talk a lot about the sibling dynamic with the other kids. I think that's an important topic. And then really my advice to parents of newly diagnosed kids. So a lot of that is new too.
Okay. So the parts that you had blogged about, it's easy to, you had captured the details at the time, but all the new content, did you struggle at all to remember, or was it recent enough that it was pretty fresh in your mind.
So I didn't struggle to remember, but what I did struggle with was reliving all the hard parts. Of our life. So be nights where I would just be like, I feel like I ran a marathon today. You know, I talked about aggression or self-injuring or whatever it may be, because I had shoved a lot of those parts way down deep to never be seen or heard again. Mm. And a lot of the older mamas that are reading my book are like, you're helping me heal things that I have PTSD over. And I was like, I'm thankful that I can do that for you. But that's it for me too. It was very healing.
Oh, it was. That's great. Now, I'm wondering, like, when you're writing these things about your marriage falling apart, whether you had to experience the pain all over again from it.
Yes, it definitely was heavy. But then I would go out to my cute husband, you know, holding a baby and cooking dinner. So I knew the ending.
Oh, that's true. That's true. And when you're going through it, you don't. So talk a little bit about the sibling relationships.
Okay. Yeah. So we had two kids right away. We had Cooper, and when Cooper was a year, we found out we were pregnant with our second son. And that was a very emotional time for me. I didn't know Cooper was autistic, but I knew that he was delayed and having struggles and challenging. So I had a lot of big feelings when I found out I was pregnant. I was scared. I wasn't scared of autism or anything like that, but I was scared that I could be enough for these two kids. Cooper needed so much from me. I worked full time. I felt like I was already losing friends and my own identity, because I didn't really know who I was trying to, you know, new mom. So I was scared, but best thing ever. I mean, I think babies are always the best thing ever, but Sawyer is 9 now. And in the beginning, their relationship is better now, is what I'm going to say. But in the beginning, they had no relationship. They didn't have any for a lot of years. And that was very emotional for me. It was hard to watch, you know, my younger son say things like, you know, why doesn't Cooper like me? Or, you know, why won't Cooper play with me? And it was very, very sad. And because of it, we have a very close relationship. So we, you know, when we were inside being away from the world, I guess, we would play, we would build forts, we would create a magical land, and it brought us really close together. But I had a lot of guilt over the years around that.
Well, what was really touching to me was when Sawyer, after that incident where Cooper had hurt him, he said to you, why don't you send me away, because Cooper needs you more than I do. I thought that was just, oh gosh. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's an amazing child.
He is. And there are these little humans born into advocacy, and they have absolutely no idea. Right. And the part that I'm going to read later is this letter to Sawyer, which is my favorite part of the book. And when in the early years, I felt bad. I felt bad that his life was different and harder and all these big emotions. Right. And then now that Sawyer is 9, I am so thankful that he gets to learn from Cooper and Cooper gets to learn from him. Like, they're the best thing for each other. And I really changed how I think about it, because they're a gift to each other.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And now you have two more children?
Yes. So 4 is a lot. So we got back.
You think?
We got back. Very big. We got back together and had a third son. His name is Harbor. And he is just, he is so unique. He is really energetic and all boy. And, oh, he's so fun. He's my feral one. He's just wild.
And how old is he now?
He's 3. Uh-huh. And we were very nervous about bringing a third baby in. I go into a lot of that in the book, and that's probably the question that I'm most commonly asked, is about having more kids. And it's one that's so hard to answer, because everyone's family is so different. But I always say I love babies, and I don't want to not have a baby out of fear. Or I want a big family, and you know, you have to listen to your heart. So my husband and I, we were nervous. I mean, and not that we wouldn't love a baby. You give us any baby, we're going to love any baby. But we were nervous that would we be enough for 3 kids, especially if the new baby had special needs. Like, we just don't know. So we were very nervous about that, but it ended up being, as it usually is, the best thing ever. And he is a perfect dynamic to our family. I call him the bridge. He's a bridge between Cooper and Sawyer. He really brought us together. He just inserts himself into everything, and you're not going to leave him out. And so that's been wonderful. And then one more, because what's one more? And we got our girl, and her name is Winnie.
Aww.
And she is just the most beautiful, precious little bundle. And she, I mean, and Cooper, he doesn't really care for babies, but she will crawl right over and like crawl and like sit on his head, because he always lays on the ground, and he's like, and it's always, that's how he says mom, and he'll sign help, and he'll look at me like, get this thing off me. But she, again, it's the thing with children. They just make their presence known, and they're going to make it work.
Wow. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
You're listening to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Kate Swenson, author of Forever Boy. Now, you mentioned that that someone had suggested you write this book and put you in touch with an agent, and you got a contract, and that's pretty unusual for a first-time author to actually get a contract before the book's even written. What do you think helped you do that? Was it the fact that you had this blog that the publisher could see that you actually could write?
I think there were a couple factors. So I think that I had the large following. So that's, you know, the world we live in. It's like, how many people can you reach? And between Facebook and Instagram, I have 900,000 followers. So I think that really helped, you know, put some street cred in my corner. So that was really good. But I also have the best fans and the most engaged fans. My publisher actually just said to me a couple days ago, because the book just came out, she's like, I have never seen people more excited and more supportive of a person in my entire life. I think it's I have these beautiful children. Like, they are just beautiful, and they're so amazing. And I think it's such a breath of fresh air to present, you know, whatever it may be, autism, motherhood, parenting, whatever, in a real light. And I think that they saw that. And we're intrigued by it.
Yes, well, that makes sense.
One of the things that was so hard to read about, and I, you know, when I was reading and I'm thinking about this, that early on when you would take Cooper to the park or something, and he would behave in ways that are not typical, the judgment that you would get from other people. How did you deal with that?
I cried a lot. my two best friends growing up from high school had babies at the exact same time as me. So we had three kids, all the same age. And, you know, in the beginning, you'd lay them all as newborns out on a blanket, and they're all the same. And then, you know, as you get to infancy and then toddler, and it was very obvious early on that my son was just different. He was doing different things. He was, you know, hiding or crying or just never like the other children. And I tried so hard to fit in. I tried to do the mommy and me classes and the, you know, go to the play groups, and I can think of all these memories, and it would never work out where, you know, the kids were doing an activity and Cooper would be at the door screaming to go, or all the kids are playing in the sandbox and, you know, he's throwing the sand or eating the sand or whatever it may be, running away. And I would have all these memories of looking at all the moms standing there drinking coffee, talking about their lives. And I was always climbing in the play structures and, you know, keeping my son safe and the other kids safe. And I would just watch them. And I so desperately wanted, I desperately wanted to be like them. I wanted to be calm and relaxed and be in the groups. And it was so lonely. I say parts of me turned off for a lot of years because I just didn't know how to fit in.
Mm. And it's hard as a bystander to resist judging when it seems like a kid's really misbehaving and the parent's not doing anything or just letting him. And but that's, and now, but reading your book really awakened me to that, that maybe there are times when I have judged somebody when I had no idea what was really going on.
Yeah, but I know.
Here's what I say, so, and not to bring up a sad topic, but I had someone pass away from cancer years ago. It's in the book. And I remember before I knew anyone with cancer, it was just like a story that I would hear, right? And you're like, oh, that's sad. And then you go on to your next, like, you don't, we only know what we know. I think that's the, that's so important to know, to be like, we can't know everything. We can't understand everything, but that's really honestly the reason why I share. So if you're at the grocery store and you know nothing of autism and you see, you know, an adult man with headphones on stamping their foot because they're upset over Cheetos, whatever it may be, they don't have this kind of Cheetos, you'll think, that's like that Cooper kid. I know that kid. That's not scary. He's just autistic. Like, that's seriously my dream, that, like, we can just normalize this condition.
And, yeah, and just have a little more empathy, a little more understanding.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, Kate, why don't you read the letter to now I can't remember the what you said you were going to read from the book, the letter to Sawyer. Sawyer, is that it?
Yep. So to set the scene, the kids were, I think they were 6 and 4. Cooper was 6, and we were in our really hard years. So a lot of aggression and different things, couldn't leave the house and just a lot of hard times. And I had a lot of sibling guilt for Sawyer that he was, you know, not being able to go to the birthday parties and leaving events early and whatever it may be. So I went to a therapist for the first time ever, and I could have talked about anything in the whole world. And I chose to just talk about how I was failing my second son. And her advice was to write a letter to him that he could read when he was older. So I will read this to you. The therapist's prescription was simple. Write a letter to Sawyer, one that he would read when he was older. One that could help him understand why our life was the way it was. She said it would be therapeutic to get it all out. That weekend, I climbed into my bed and started writing. I didn't sugarcoat my words. I wrote from the heart. My little Sawyer, I want to tell you a few things. At 4 years old, I know you won't understand them, so I'm writing them down for you to read when you are older. Someday, when Mom is old and gray, I want you to read this letter. I want you to understand. It's a thank you and an apology and a dose of reality. First, I want to thank you for simply being. Thank you for being with me. Thank you for being my son and a brother to Cooper. That probably sounds silly, but the world is such a better place with you in it. And so on your hardest days, please know that. You have so many gifts to give this world. I want to thank you for growing up too. Again, probably silly. But you are so unbelievably lucky because you get the gift of aging and becoming a man. And you and I both know that not everyone does. You are lucky, Sawyer. You hit the genetic lottery. You get to learn independence and success and failure, too. You get to sneak a beer and feel the thunder in your chest at your first concert. You get to drive a car, kiss a girl, walk across the stage at graduation, and vote. These are gifts, my son. Thank you for giving me so many precious moments. Your first word was mama. I cried. I can still see you catching your first fish. You were wearing a fleece camel jacket. You were so proud of catching a fish just like your dad. You learned to ride a bike at 3. That's amazing. You potty trained yourself by watching me work with your brother. You have always been fiercely independent. You were never sick. You learned everything so effortlessly and simply. You gave me a part of motherhood that was free from worry. Thank you. I have a feeling that you won't always be easy. You're going to be just like your dad and give me lots of trouble. Your Grandma Swenson tells me stories about your dad that give me heart palpitations. Go easy on them. You know I'm a big baby, and please don't ever ride a motorcycle. I want to say I'm sorry, too. I don't ever want you to think I missed out on your life because your brother needed me more. I was faced with choices, Sawyer, so many more than most parents. It wasn't fair, having to choose, and I like to believe I made the right ones. You may think differently. I don't know yet. I worry that you may resent Cooper. I hope not. I want you to know that I was always watching, Sawyer. You may have been throwing a pitch at a baseball game or scoring a goal in hockey and looked to the stands and just saw Dad or Grandpa and Grandma. I was watching, kid. I'm always watching. Even if you can't see me, I see you. I may be watching from the car with your brother or wandering behind him in the bleachers or seeing it on video. I will never miss a second of your life. I promise you that. I learned early on that if I wanted to give you a normal life, I would have to share you. So I found people I trusted who would bring you along. I will never be able to thank them enough for including you. There are so many days that I missed you too, and I would feel tears spring to my eyes as I watched you run off to go to the park with the neighbors or visit the zoo with family. I was jealous because they got you. For years, I watched you grow up through photos and videos sent to me by other people. They will never know the gift they gave me for taking you and showing you the world when I had to be at a therapy center or a hospital or keep your brother safe from himself. And last, I want to tell you something that may surprise you, but maybe not. I don't know what your relationship is going to look like with Cooper. I have hope, though, so much hope, that someday you see the gifts and beauty that he brings to our lives and not the aggressions, the struggles, or the missed events. You are lucky that you have autism in your life because you get to see a side of the world that most adults never get to. You get to see hope, resilience, differences, and you get to see the fight, the evil, the sad parts, too. When you were younger, I felt bad. I no longer do. You get the gift of knowing Cooper. And you have a choice, kid. You can change the world for him and help me give him his best life, and that is a blessing. Let having a brother with a disability change you for the better. See differences. See the underdog. See the discriminated and the forgotten, and give them a voice, kid. Speak so loudly that your voice shakes even when you're scared. I love you, buddy. But yeah, I wrote that to him. It's so emotional.
I don't know how you can get through reading it. I was having trouble listening.
when I did the audio book, I only cried at two parts in the audio book. And I had two, like, I'm imagining being funny, but like, two, like, big burly men, like, you know, like producing it. And I was like, I gotta go. I was crying at that part.
I bet. Wow. And of course, you know, at nine, he's got a lot of growing yet to do, and you really are looking ahead, and you don't know how things will turn out between Sawyer and Cooper, but it certainly seems like you've set a great foundation for them.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying. So when I was many years ago before kids, I was at a party and talking to this guy, and he was telling me about how his brother didn't have necessarily a neurological disorder, but had like physical special needs. And the parents were always like missing things to bring him to the hospital. They were always like at different, you know, surgeries and stuff. And he's like, I was so angry for a lot of years. And it was foreshadowing, you know, when I look back on it, because we work really, really hard, my husband and I, to give Sawyer his own life. And I think we do it. That's one thing that we do well. Like, he has his own life.
Wow. Well, I'm sure that at some point he will look back and realize that and be grateful for it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Kate Swenson, author of Forever Boy, A Mother's Memoir of Autism and Finding Joy. And it's, you know, throughout the book, throughout your conversation, it's just obvious how this isn't just, you're not just saying this. You really have found joy, and not in spite of Cooper, but in Cooper.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a beautiful thing. I wanted to ask you about, you know, you did have some very caring therapists and teachers along the way, didn't you?
Oh, absolutely.
For Cooper.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that must have been, that was a plus for sure. Not everybody was, you know, like the medical community.
Now, what about your local school district? Have there been some good experiences with that?
Absolutely. So where the book ends off, right when COVID started, Cooper was actually going to a therapy center full time, which was a good setting for many years. And when it ended, because of COVID, everything changed, shut down, obviously, they decided not to take him back. And I am a true believer that when one door shuts, another door opens, but it may not feel like that for a long time. Mm-hmm. So we were really scared. Mm-hmm. We didn't know what was going to happen next. We had had bad experiences with the school district at kindergarten. So, you know, that's the thing that most people outside our world understand is there is not infinite, endless possibilities for, you know, programs during the day. There's a limited base where you live and, you know, what the opportunities are. And I called the school district and I was like, you know, eating. I'm like, hi, this is Kate Swenson. Because I had said, you know, we're never coming back here. And I was like, hi, can you take my son back? It probably won't work, but can we try? You know, I was super friendly and they were super friendly. And he started fourth grade last year. And it was the best thing we've ever done. He's a fifth grader this year, but so he had the same teacher for 2 years. He's in a class with four or five other kiddos just like him. And he's even started integrating with the gen ed kids and doing Phi Ed and gym and music. And he's just doing so well. And he's Aww. So happy there. So it's, I put a sentence in the book that parenting has a way of making you eat your words. Never say never. Because here we are.
Yep. Yep. And you were, and you know, even from the beginning, you, before you had kids, you know, my kids will never blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah.
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 Every non-parent, I think, says that and has to eat their words.
Don't you think you're the best parent before you have kids? Like, yeah. Like, I'm going to be the best. Yeah. And also, having four, a lot of things flip. Like, the matching outfits kind of, although this Easter I am bringing, I'm going big. But typically, the matching outfits aren't there, and there's some runny noses and some dirty shoes. I mean, that's just how it goes. Yeah,
absolutely. Now, I was Googling last night about what the causes of autism are, and genetics is right up there, that it's often, or that they have found some genetic mutations that are linked to autism. So, couple of questions is, does that make it more challenging for parents to decide whether to have more kids because they think their odds might be higher of having another child with special needs?
Well, I think there is still so much mystery about what causes autism. I mean, you could, you know, so many, it's a topic, honestly, that I don't even try to tiptoe into because there's so many feelings around what causes this and how do we help it? And, you know, there's so much of that. I, like I said, we were afraid, you know, for a little bit about having a third and fourth baby just because we didn't know if, you know, Cooper does take up so much time, his needs are so significant, would we be able to do that for multiple children? And before Cooper, we were blissfully unaware. After having Cooper, we weren't. Like, we know this is a possibility. This could happen. And it's just a decision that has to, some soul searching and come from the heart. I mean, we definitely did that. I talk about that a lot in the book.
Mm. Yeah, the controversy about what causes autism, of course, we've all heard some of the theories in the past that have caused a lot of, like I said, a lot of controversy. Is there mm-hmm. much research being done in the area?
I think there is. I think there is. What I'll say is, so I worked much of my career at PBS, which was one of my favorite jobs I ever had. And while I was there, they did a huge, huge documentary on Alzheimer's. It was probably about 3 or 4 years ago. It was really beautifully done. And they were talking about how no one cared about Alzheimer's or talked about it or researched it. Or, I mean, it was just this hidden away thing. And then it became almost kind of a pandemic. I mean, it was just so many people, it just really surfaced. And I think that autism is becoming more talked about now and more researched. And that's a good thing because, you know, when we look at kiddos like Cooper, he's going to live with mom and dad. And if when he can't, he's going to need some sort of group home or some sort of setting to live in, which is terrifying for me to talk about. But we have to prepare now. We have these kids growing up, yeah. just as we have these seniors that are being cared for by a spouse or a nursing home. But so it's kind of like that. We have to start talking about it more.
Right, right. Kate, let's talk a little bit more about the writing of the book. So you said that the timing was not ideal because suddenly you had all these kids at home and you were pregnant and you had a book contract. What did you do, right in the middle of the night?
Yes, I did. Actually, the harder part was homeschooling my then 7-year-old. I realized I'm not a teacher, and he is not an ideal student for me. And there was a lot of fighting and bickering. So that was really hard, just that whole homeschool stuff. I don't want to ever do that again. So what my husband would do is, we had a hallway that went to the office, is he would, it's so funny, he would push a couch up the long way, still blocking the hallway. So the babies would just like stand behind the couch because they would just crawl and knock on my door. But one of the funnier parts was I'd be like, I have to write today. You're not supporting me. And he's like, go write. And you know, then I would yell, I don't feel inspired. I mean, you can't just write. So it was really hard, but we made it through, and we are stronger for it.
Now, do you have any like rituals or treats or things that help you get to writing? Are there certain snacks that you need while you write, or certain music playing in the background, or anything like that?
I operate off sheer panic alone.
Ah.
I would say coffee. I'm a coffee drinker.
Coffee.
So I have never had, of my 4 children, my second son, who I'm going to say is my favorite because he sleeps, he has slept since the day he was born. He sleeps, 10 hours a night. So I always tell him, I whisper in his ear, you're my favorite because he sleeps. And the other ones do not sleep. And so we're tired a lot. We're tired a lot, but we've learned to like kind of function with it,
Well, so did you set yourself certain goals for number of words per day?
Oh my gosh, what did I do? I mean, so everyone that writes a book, I think it's different,
right?
For like, yeah, what has submitted. But I'm a first time author, so I asked I have a wonderful editor. So I said to her, I'm like, can I just send you 2 chapters at a time? Because I didn't want to write. I've heard stories of like writers like submitting like a book or like 6 chapters and then being like, this is terrible. I mean, I've heard, I'm like, I don't have time to write this twice, so I cannot mess up. So I would do 2 chapters at a time, and I saved my hardest chapters for last, which were the aggression chapter, because I don't talk about that a lot publicly, and then the last chapter where I talk about my advice to my younger self, which is my favorite chapter, but was the hardest for me to write.
Now, the book is largely chronological, but did you write it that way?
No, hopped all over. So actually, a book goes through like 10 rounds of editing, and like each one kind of gets more intense. And I was at a conference speaking, and I got this like time-sensitive email from someone at HarperCollins, and they were like, this doesn't make sense. Like, you were pregnant before you had the baby. Like, I was writing it. So I was like, let's go ahead and fix that.
Okay. And did you always intend for the finished product, the book, to be in a chronological order? Because there's obviously lots of options, you know, that you could have done, you know, here's where we are now and flashbacks or...
So I actually planned on, when I submitted my proposal, so I had a viral video that really put me, you know, on the map, and was shared by the Today Show, lots of viewers, and I grew super fast, I had growing pains, and because of that, I got a lot of bullying. It was very polarizing, and I actually had the book in my mind was going to open with that chapter, and I wrote it right away. It was very powerful, and it was about, you know, I guess I was doing autism wrong, and I was parenting wrong, and, you know, just really talking about that. And I remember someone along the line was like, this is a little heavy. I'm like, ooh, this is heavy. So it changed to chronological then. But what I did was I put a really fun's not the right word, but I would say, you know, an emotional story to open every chapter. And it may not be about our family. It could be about other people. But I like to, you know, bring in other pieces of disability into our story. So you're kind of getting more of a taste.
And was that something that you did from the very beginning, or was that part of the editing process, realizing, oh, this would be a way to structure? Because the structuring a book, particularly a memoir, is, like I said, there's a lot of choices that you can make, and I'm just curious as to how those choices were made.
I started that way. So I don't know where it came from. That's just how I write. So I started that way. I don't even know if there's a name for it, but I just really like to pull the reader in. Each chapter kind of takes them on a journey and up and down. And at the end, I always try to leave them with something beautiful about how I've changed. And that part kind of stayed through the whole time. It never got cut.
So you essentially, in a sense, each chapter has a story arc to it.
Yes. So say something that I didn't know. So as a, it can be very overwhelming for a first time author, because I had always considered myself a writer. I mean, I took courses in college. I am a writer, right? And I didn't know how hard it is to write a book. I mean, I'm saying that really just openly and honestly, you know, there's a natural progression through the book, and it takes the reader on a journey, and every chapter, you know, teaches them something. And I didn't know all that. So it was kind of scary. So now when I talk to new authors, they are just like I was. They're like, this is way harder than I thought. And I'm like, make an outline. Make an outline, friend.
And so did you do that?
Yeah. Yes. So what I did is I made an outline, and I put an opening in each chapter, and then the main story. So like, you know, my chapters are marriage, having children, sibling, medications, aggression, that sort of thing. So education. So I tried to, you know, have each chapter around a topic.
Mm. Now, you don't – it's interesting because at least the copy of the book I'm looking at, it doesn't have titles to the chapters. It's just one
– No, so. No one ever asked me to.
Ah. But you have them in your – it seems like in your mind, because you're saying the aggression chapter. So
yes,
like
yep.
Which chapter – what chapter is that? Which chapter number is that?
That's the chapter about choice. So it starts out every parent – I'm not sure if I have
it. Oh, that's okay. Towards the end. So let me talk a little bit more about – I'm looking at your blog – at Finding Cooper's Voice, and you recently started a foundation. Would you like to tell us about that?
Yes, I would love to. So, you know, I work my days in social media and influencing, and that can be a little heavy sometimes and feel, I don't know, like I'm not doing enough. And so I come from a nonprofit background, and I come from public media, so I wanted to start a foundation. So my girlfriend and I, Amanda, co-founded the More Than Project, and we essentially support the special needs family as a whole, or the people that work and choose our children. So teachers, therapists, the siblings, the caregivers, and we've been up and running about a year, and our sole purpose is raising money and giving it back. And it's been super fun because, like, right now we're doing a partnership with a company that only hires special needs adults with intellectual disabilities and physical disabilities, and they are making bracelets, and it's called the Spotlight Project. They're beautiful. So we designed a I Am More bracelet for the foundation, and we're selling them, and we get $5 from each bracelet, and we are giving that to teachers. We're going to pick three teachers and put sensory rooms in their classrooms. So it's just been so fun to, like, find these businesses that employ kiddos just like Cooper and are doing good work, raise money, you know, introduce them to my audience, and then give money to the people that work with our kids. It's beautiful.
So you have, like, it looks like a couple of different things, this More Than a Caregiver Project also, and the More Than a Sibling Scholarship.
Yep. So we started with the More Than a Caregiver, and that's really where the idea came from, was So you're a mom and you have special needs kids and you can't leave your house and your friendships have dwindled and you don't sleep and you need to work on your mental health, but you can't get to counseling sessions because this is how my life was. I couldn't drive in a car safely. I couldn't, you know, who would watch my kids? So we found counseling agencies to provide free mental health counseling to caregivers, and they meet them via Zoom right where they're at. And that has been a beautiful project. So that's ongoing. And then we took nominations and gave sibling scholarships to 3 kids that are siblings to children with special needs. And we had them pick something just for them. So, like, this isn't something that you would normally need to buy your child. This is the Xbox they want. This is the whatever it may be. So that was so beautiful. And then now it's the More Than a Teacher that's happening.
Oh, yeah. I love what you wrote about this on your, you know, on the website, that the More Than a Sibling Scholarship Program recognizes and blesses the children who walk alongside our special humans so they know how special they are themselves.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's been a lot of fun, and it's been a really feel good. And I hope it just keeps growing. I hope we just keep finding more businesses that want to work with us, that so we can come full circle and keep helping.
Cool. Well, we're about out of time. Do you have any anything that we didn't ask you that you wanted, a message that you wanted to give?
Yeah. So I'm asked, you know, is this book just for families of children with special needs? And that's a very honest question and a good question. You know, at a high level, I think it is about autism and in our family, but really it's for any person who is faced with something that causes them to pivot. Like, I thought I was going to be a doctor and now I'm not. Or I thought, you know, my marriage would be perfect and now I'm getting divorced. Know that this book is really about transformation and providing hope and figuring out how to get through something that isn't what you originally planned.
Oh, that's a very good point. And it's actually just a very heartwarming story too. And very
a story about showing empathy for our fellow human beings that aren't just like we are, you know? I mean, that's very important.
Yeah. And it's inspiring.
Good. Oh, absolutely.
So, Caroline, do you have any final words for us?
Oh. Well, I'll tell you, there were so many things that she said in the book, but I'm going to say this one. There is a light at the end of the tunnel. It just may not be the light that you imagined it or dreamed of, but it's there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Kate, for being with us today. In whatever way you can, please thank Cooper for sharing you with us today.
And yes, I'm actually in Ohio. I'm here at a speaking engagement, so I'm in a hotel room.
I
just left all night.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. Well, it's a good thing with everything that you're doing. It's a good thing you know how to get by without a lot of sleep.
Yes,
for sure.
So thank you once again, and see you all next week on Writer's Voices.